What happened to Andrew and what happened to us, it was completely out of our control. We were completely blindsided. There was just absolutely nothing anybody could do. And so when I found this work, when I found this direction, it gave me this sense that I was doing something, that I was being productive. And now I'm working in this field, and every day I feel that there is a reason that I'm doing this, and it's him. He's the reason that I'm doing this.
Welcome to the Resilient People Podcast. My name is Janet Fanacki. I speak with extraordinary, regular people from around the world who are admired for their resilience. They've overcome a major challenge in their life, found a purpose from their experience, and now help others be resilient too. The power of purpose is something I talk a lot about in presentations and interviews. People who have purpose find it easier to move forward. But purpose looks different to everyone. It can be something that's small, like tackling a to-do list for the day, or something big, like my previous guest, Ellie Gotz, in becoming a public speaker about his time in the Holocaust and the power of giving up hate to find happiness. In this episode, I'm introducing you to Melissa Sheldrick, a Toronto mom, wife, and patient safety advocate. She came to this role and her purpose through a very tragic circumstance. Melissa's son, Andrew, who loved trains, swimming, and helping others at school, had been living with a sleep disorder for a couple of years. It had him waking throughout the night, and as a result, no one in the house was sleeping well. A doctor prescribed a remedy that worked well in allowing Andrew to sleep, but one small change would prove to be lethal. In 2016, 8-year-old Andrew lost his life because of a preventable mistake made by a pharmacist's error. Melissa would learn that there was also no accountability for pharmacists or pharmacies to report errors at that time. She made it her mission to change that so that no other person would have to endure what her family went through. I spoke with Melissa Sheldrick from her home in Toronto. This recording was done over Zoom, so please excuse any technical glitches.
All right, Melissa Sheldrick. So nice to see you.
So nice. Thanks for having me back.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm busy and busy with work and busy with life, despite, being in the house, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it? Everybody's kind of having their own challenges around this COVID year.
Mm-hmm. But we're all healthy, so I'm grateful.
Yeah, we got to be grateful for those little mercies. Mm-hmm. So it's so nice to have you here. And let me express my deep sorrow for the loss of Andrew, your son who was 8 when he passed away in March of 2016. How are you doing?
Thank you. Well, as a grieving mom, you get up every day and, he's the first thing I think about. And of course, his picture's in our room, and sometimes you say a couple of words to him and go about your business, and you have to get through the day. You have to keep him close, but you also have to do the day and put one foot in front of the other. And some days that's easier than others. And on the hard days, it's okay. It's okay to have hard days, but you keep busy and you surround yourself with people who get it.
So important, right? Having that sense of community. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about Andrew.
So Andrew, he was 8 when he died, and he was a pretty typical little boy. He was busy, always on the go. He loved trains. When we would be driving in the car, and he would either hear the signals going or he would hear the GO train coming, honestly, he would make us stop the car and pull over so he could just watch it go by. And if it was far away, he would make us wait until it would go by, because he just loved it. And he was such an avid swimmer. He loved swimming. and soccer, right? He loved his soccer and his Xbox and pizza. And yeah, and he was sweet. He had a big, big heart. And we heard a lot of beautiful things from his classmates and his teachers and about the way, you know, the kid he was at school, the kid that we didn't get to see, that life that he had and how he gravitated towards kids who were maybe hurting a little bit or who needed somebody. So, you know, that it warms my heart to know that that's the soul that he is. Yeah.
What a sweet, empathetic little guy.
Mm-hmm.
So can we talk a little bit about what happened back in March of 2016?
I'll back up a little bit. When Andrew was about 5 and a half, he started having these behavioral episodes. They kind of came out of the blue, and he would just have these meltdowns in the evenings when he got home. And it would be such a battle to go to bed. And as a teacher and as an ECE, I thought, what is this behavior, right? And what am I going to do this? Because I have an education in doing this. And I had a daughter, and, you know, we never dealt with this. So it was frustrating, and it was overwhelming. He would get up in the night 2 and 3 and 4 times sometimes, and he would come and wake us up, or he would be shrieking in his bed. And we just had no idea what was going on. We went to behavior specialists, and we saw a child psychologist, and we saw a pediatrician, and nobody had any answers. They had the answers that I already had because of my education experience, my background. So finally, a pediatrician said, I want you to take him for a sleep test. And I thought, okay. So I took him and stayed at the sleep clinic. And then a few weeks later, and this was September, and we had been dealing with this since January, and we were exhausted. We were completely overwhelmed. And I used to go into school, and the kids would, my kids would see the size of my coffee cup. And if it was really big that morning, they'd say, look, we have to be good because look how big her coffee cup is this morning. I had such a supportive staff around me too, but you know, so 9 months later, we find out that he has a sleep disorder called parasomnia. And so parasomnia is anything that's abnormal that happens to you in your sleep. In Andrew's case, it was that he went into his REM sleep twice as fast as he should have. So, you know, if we go through a sleep cycle all night, you can imagine the disruption that is through the entire night. That's what was causing the problems. So I asked the doctor, you know, what do we do about that? How can I fix it? And she suggested that we give him tryptophan, which is not a drug, right? It's an amino acid that we get in turkey, right? And chicken. So she gave us a prescription to go to the drugstore and get it in a prescription form. And it came in large chalky tablets. He was prescribed 5 every night before bed. So it was a lot.
How large were the tablets?
Like a Tylenol capsule. So pretty big and chalky, like a Tylenol tablet. So we crushed it and we made smoothies and we mixed it in applesauce and we did whatever we had to do to get it into him. It was a 180. It was a complete 180. He started sleeping. The behaviors stopped. He was a kid. There's normal behavior, but there was no more aggression and there was no more night terrors. And he started to physically grow and enjoy school. And it was just a miracle, right? This amino acid. So we did that every 2 weeks, right? Oh, no, sorry, not every 2 weeks. The pills we got on a month's supply. But every night we had to crush them and feed them to him.
And what year did you start giving him that?
He was 6.
Okay.
He was 6 at that point. Mm-hmm. So the following summer, I took him back for another sleep study just to see if anything had changed and if we needed to adjust the dose and whatever. And nothing had changed. The results were pretty much the same. So the doctor said, if it's working, keep doing it, because there were no side effects, right? It's not a drug. I didn't have to worry about it interacting with anything. It was completely safe. I said, that's fine. And I'm okay with that, but he can't swallow these tablets. We have to crush them every night. And so she said, well, find a compounding pharmacy and they'll make it into a liquid for him. And I thought, oh, well, isn't that handy? Because I had never heard of a compounding pharmacy. So I just Googled the one that was closest to our home and took it to them. And they were like, for sure, we can make this, no problem. It had to be refilled every 2 weeks because it just had a 2 week shelf life, and it had to stay in the fridge. Those were the instructions. And then he had a teaspoon of it before bed, and that was it. And it was so much easier. And the thing is that he knew the difference that it made, right? He knew that taking it made him feel better. So we did that from the time he was 7, and we did that for about 18 months. And we would pick it up every 2 weeks, bring it home, put it in the fridge, just same thing. And then it was the middle of March, and we were going on a March break trip to Montreal on the Monday morning. So on the Friday, I called in the refill and said, we're going to pick it up on Saturday. We did that, picked it up, brought it home, put it in the fridge. And then I gave him his dose that Saturday night, and he didn't wake up the next morning.
Did you sense that there was anything different about it?
No, because it didn't look any different. He didn't say it tasted any different. And there was just no way of knowing. The label on the bottle was right. It had his name on it. It had tryptophan on it. It had our address on it. Everything on the label was right. And that Sunday morning, we were just in complete and utter turmoil. And the police were here, and the paramedics were here, and the coroner was here, and answering all these questions. And we just had no idea. The paramedic said to me, he said, you know, sometimes kids just die in their sleep. And I was like, no, I said, I can't accept that. That's not okay. And, you know, all these years later, it happens, right? It happens. But in that moment, I couldn't accept that. Mm-hmm. But then we didn't know for 4.5 months, right? We're trying to figure out how to be a family of three instead of family of four. Mm-hmm. And how do we get through our daily life in this new state? My daughter was 14 at the time, right? She was in grade 9. So she was just starting high school. You know, how do we nurture her so that she can get through this school year and get through her high school education? We did our best, and we stuck together. We found support through an amazing organization in Oakville called the Lighthouse for Grieving Children. Mm-hmm. And that was such a great support for Sam. And that was huge. And then in July of 2016, the police called and they said, we need you to come in. And so we went in, and the coroner was there and the police were there. And they said, there was no tryptophan in that bottle. It was all baclofen. So baclofen is a really powerful muscle relaxant. People who have muscular dystrophy and other muscle conditions use baclofen. And there was no tryptophan in the bottle. It was completely baclofen, and it was mixed to the tryptophan recipe. So it was 3 times the lethal dose for an adult. Now, when we were just starting to gain some movement forward in this life, we were thrust back into this trauma and grief and anger and the rage, right?
Melissa, were you willing to accept for those 4+ months that he did just die in his sleep naturally?
No, I knew there had to be something. You know, I remember asking my doctor, could he have had something like meningitis and I missed it? Was there some kind of a congenital heart disease that I didn't know about? The coroner's office was doing autopsy and things like that, and they were looking for that and toxicology and all of that. I knew there was a reason. He just didn't die in his sleep. After we found out what happened, they said, we think that it was a mistake made in the pharmacy. And I said, what do you mean there was a mistake made in the pharmacy? And they said, yeah, these things happen, and mistakes happen in the pharmacy. So the police had to do an investigation. Institute for Safe Medication Practices Canada, they came in and did a full investigation and an analysis of what had happened. And yeah, they confirmed that there was a series of errors that happened in that pharmacy that day when they mixed it. And now it was 5 months later, so nobody knew who was working that night and who wasn't following the procedures. And it was a lot of guessing game to try and put a story together that made sense of what happened. And so in the meantime, I started researching. What do you mean medication errors happen in pharmacies? Why have I never heard of this? Where does this happen? Who has this happened to? And the internet was full of answers, right? And questions. And who's going to know about this, right? This can't happen again. This can't happen to anybody else. This has turned our life upside down. So I found out that Nova Scotia was the only province in the country that the pharmacists were mandated to report their errors. And the purpose of reporting the errors is to figure out what's gone wrong. When you collect all that data, you can see where the gaps are. You can address them.
Can I ask a question? When
Sure.
pharmacists are reporting their errors, why are they doing that? Where is it in the process where they're detecting that an error was found?
There's several areas. Sometimes they catch it before it even reaches the patient. Those are important incidents to put into the reporting system because those errors were caught and they didn't happen. But that's really good learning when you look at it on a big picture because you figure out how to fix it so it doesn't happen again. Often patients will pick up their prescription and their prescription is not what's in the bag, or the wrong pills are in the bottle. There's any number of errors. It can be inputted incorrectly into the computer system. It could be counted wrong. It could be the wrong strength, right? If you get something that's 50 milligrams and you get 25 milligrams or 100 milligrams. So there's any number of places that an error can happen. This is a risky process. Pharmacy is a risky process, and compounding pharmacy is far riskier because there's formulations and there's powders, there's recipes that have to be followed, and there's specific processes and guidelines that need to be followed. When I found out that, in Ontario, if this pharmacist didn't say anything, nobody would know because he didn't have to. Right? There's a regulator that's there to protect the public, but they didn't mandate community pharmacists to report these errors. And that was not okay with me. I thought, there is no way that this is going to happen again. And what am I going to do to ensure that that happens? So I did more research and I started a petition on change.org asking that the Minister of Health at that time for him to put the mandate through to have community pharmacists report these errors. And when they report errors, they're anonymously reporting because it's not about who made the mistake. It's about where is it in the process, in the system, that it fell apart. So that petition gained a lot of traction. We got about 21,000 signatures. It hit the media, CBC and CTV and Global News and City and The Star had a front page on it. And so we finally met with the Minister of Health in November at Queen's Park. He had us there and he said, I'm on it. He said, this is ridiculous. This shouldn't have happened. And he guided me to the Ontario College of Pharmacists. And that was November. And the first week of January, they called and said, we need you here. We need to hear from you. We need to make a program to ensure that this doesn't happen again. That was the beginning of the AIMS program in Ontario. And it's Assurance and Improvements in Medication Safety. And it is a standardized, mandatory quality improvement program for community pharmacies that they participate in. And the AIMS logo, the A and the S are Andrew's initials. So it's a program that's very near and dear to my heart. And they've been amazing putting this in play. And pharmacists are, they're reporting errors and they're fully onboarded as of earlier this year or late last year. And there's over 4,500 pharmacies in Ontario and they're all reporting. And so in the meantime, when all of this was happening, I was teaching full time and I was doing all this advocacy work and writing to regulators across the country. And as it stands now, we have 5 provinces that have mandatory air reporting, continuous quality improvement programs, and BC is putting theirs in place, and it'll be in place within the next year or two. So, but it's, you know, our healthcare system is siloed. And so it's province by province by province. That's been a real challenge, but it's not stopping me. And I continue to be in touch with all the provinces, and I've spoken at pharmacist conferences across the country.
And around the world.
And around the world. At the Canadian Pharmacist Conference in 2018, a gentleman, professor from the University of Canberra in Australia, he approached me and he said, Australia needs to hear from you. You need to come to this conference. And he made it happen. And so, yeah, I went and worked with that organization, the association there, for a week, and combined it with the best mother-daughter trip in the world. And so it's getting there, and people are really seeing the reason that these programs, they have to be in place. It's a matter of public safety, of patient safety, and trying to improve it.
Can you describe a little bit about what your role entails as being a patient advocate?
Mm-hmm. So in 2017, I found a group called Patients for Patient Safety Canada, and they're a volunteer organization under the umbrella of the Canadian Patient Safety Institute. And we are a group of people who have been harmed by the healthcare system in one way or another, whether we're the caregivers or whether the harm has experienced each person. And we do all kinds of work. Through that, I sit on a medication safety committee as a Patients for Patient Safety Canada representative. They will often, somebody, an organization will reach out to them that they need somebody to speak on something. So we have those opportunities. 4 of us in Ontario sat down with Deputy Premier, Minister of Health, Christine Elliott, to speak to her about patient safety in Ontario. So really a strong group of advocates who are determined to improve patient safety in this country.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
When you think about, well, first of all, my thought is, do not stand in the way of a mom on a mission. Mm-hmm. Right? Between that year in 2016, March, and to November, what you managed to accomplish, did that help in your grief at all?
It did. And what happened to Andrew and what happened to us, it was completely out of our control. We were completely blindsided. There was just absolutely nothing anybody could do. And so when I found this work, when I found this direction, it gave me this sense that I was doing something, mm-hmm. that I was being productive. And now I'm working in this field, and every day I feel that there is a reason that I'm doing this, and it's, you know, it's him. He's the reason that I'm doing this. And it does, it brings a sense of calm. Yeah.
What do you think Andrew would think about all this?
He would think that he would not like his picture all over the planet. And he would say that I'm embarrassing him.
I think that a kid would say, that is so cool. Look at my face is everywhere.
No, he was pretty shy. He was pretty shy. So, yeah, but you know what? He had that kind of heart. So I think, you know, aside from him being the center of attention, I think he'd be pretty, pretty pleased that people are being protected.
And then the sense of resilience that you have, I mean, aside from just drinking, you know, massive cups of coffee to get to work and function throughout the day, was there something that you feel in your life that prepared you for this kind of episode in your life?
Yeah, well, we lost our dad, my sister and I, we lost our dad in 2004, and it was pretty sudden. He had a tumor that he didn't know about, and in a matter of 3 to 4 months, he passed away. And again, it blindsided us and it knocked the wind out of us as a family. He was very young. And sometimes I think about it and I think, oh, that was my dress rehearsal. That was part one. I never could have foreseen what would happen. And we supported our mom and did the best we could during that time. And then Andrew was born in 2007. So another angel in our midst to help move us forward. And then this.
Yeah, losing a parent and then losing a child. I mean, those are two very significant, huge things in your life. Is there something in the sense that you do for yourself that helps to give you strength? Is there words that you live by in your life? Is there anything that you feel like, that's what I go to? That's my place where I recharge?
My people, my village. I am an introvert by nature. I am quite comfortable and happy in my own being, but I have the most incredible support system around me. My husband, my daughter, my sister lives with us, and her two little ones, who are 3 and 1.5 years old.
Ooh, that'll keep the house lively.
Oh, yes, it does. It does. And yeah, and my therapy dog, who's asleep on the couch. And surrounding yourself with a village is the only way, it's the only way I could have gotten through. The first anniversary of Andrew's passing, we had an open house and we invited our village because up until that point, we hadn't been able to really thank people for their love and compassion and meals and cleaning and everything that they supported. And at one point, we had about 75 people in the house, and this is not a big house. And it was just amazing. And I thought, yes, this is what I need, right?
That's the house that love built.
Yeah, I have the best friends, the best girlfriends that anybody could ask for. And so I'm blessed. And it's a lot to find joy after this kind of trauma and grief. And you actually feel guilty for feeling happy, and you feel guilty for finding joy. And so we lost Andrew in 2016, but then in 2017, my nephew was born, and I got to be in the delivery room. And it was just the most incredible thing I've ever witnessed, because it wasn't me having the baby, so I could appreciate it that much more. And I really think it was in that moment that I was like, this is joy, right? This is joy. And I've read somewhere that you can't experience joy without grief, right? That these are two such ends of the spectrum. You can feel them both at the same time. And that's okay, and that's healthy. That was a light for me when he was born. And now this is a busy household, and they're amazing. They're funny and they're loving and they're learning. So there's been a lot of learning. Yeah. And a lot of self-compassion and a lot of allowing yourself to be. Right? Allowing yourself to be. On Mother's Day was awful this year. My daughter Sam was in Ottawa. She was taking summer classes at school. And so we were home, and my mom was coming, and we were going to have a really nice dinner. And halfway through the day, I just broke down. And I went to my room and I closed the door. And I asked that I just be left to be. And they honored that. And I was just being. And that's what I needed in that moment. And so you have to lean in. You have to let that happen. Because if you push that down, then it comes out in a negative way. right? You have to be able to express that grief, and the understanding of the people around you, that makes it better, right? My best friend came over and she was in the backyard under the window and she said, "Do you want me to come up?" And I said, "No, thank you. I know you're here. I'll text you later." And she was like, "Okay, whatever you need." Right? And
you just learn. That's great advice to share with other people. Just learn to be, learn to accept that joy and grief can live in the same moment. Having that sense of community. Yeah, those are all important things for people to take away.
And gratitude. Gratitude was another stumbling block for me. I was always grateful for this beautiful family that I had. And then this happened and I felt almost like it was a slight against that I hadn't been grateful enough. And to be grateful after losing Andrew seemed like it was wrong in some way. But in time, in therapy, in learning, in reading, you understand that it is good to be grateful and there are things to be grateful every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day. And, you know, when COVID hit and everybody was locked in to their homes, especially in the early days when we were all locked down and isolated, I was okay. I was grateful to be working from home. And we were all healthy and we were all together and I was grateful. And, you know, it was a big shock for people to be locked down like that. And many people were not okay with it, but I was good. Mm-hmm. I had my people.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. On that note, I really enjoyed speaking with you today, Melissa.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. You know, from the words of COVID, we're in this together, whether it's COVID or whether it's grief or whether it's, you know, some community or another, we have to stick together.
But having those, you know, from somebody who's gone through something so horrible, it's like every parent's nightmare, what you've lived. For someone else to hear how you've made it out the other end, so to speak, and still be okay, for someone to learn how you've been okay, is valuable. So thank you.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that. It's important.
Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Many of us can only begin to appreciate Melissa Sheldrick's pain and sense of loss. But through this horrible experience, she has found a purpose that has helped heal her heart and help others too. Some takeaways from this conversation are the power that her purpose gave her. Starting work as a patient safety advocate gave Melissa the sense that she was doing something positive and productive. The value in surrounding yourself with a village, and the importance of practicing self-compassion and allowing yourself to just be. Some great things that we can all do to be more resilient and build a stronger mindset. I'd like to thank Melissa Sheldrick for joining me, and I'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of Resilient People. If you have a comment about Melissa's story, I'd love to hear from you. Leave a review, send me an email. The email address is info@resilientpeople.ca or comment on the website at resilientpeople.ca. You can learn more about Melissa Sheldrick at her website, melissasheldrick.ca. Today's episode was produced by Kanika Codrington, Steph Coburn, and Sophie Shin. New episodes of Resilient People come out every 2 weeks. There are many for you to listen to and more to come. Subscribe wherever you listen, on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you haven't already, please leave a review. To learn more about me and other resilient people, visit resilientpeople.ca or on social media. If you or someone you know is considered to be resilient, I'd love to hear your story. Many of my guests have been recommended by their friends, partners, and they've even written to me with their own stories. Go to the contact page on resilientpeople.ca and learn more. Till next time, I'm Janet Fanacki. Bye for now.
Divorce sucks, but it doesn't have to be all bad. Hi, I'm Leanne Townsend, a family law lawyer and partner at the law firm Brody Thorning LLP. I'm also the host of the Divorcing Well podcast. Divorcing Well aims to help provide listeners with the tools and knowledge they need to support themselves legally, financially, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. I want listeners to tune into Divorcing Well because they are looking for the knowledge and inspiration to get them through the rough days. And on the positive days, they will gain the tools that they need to heal and move through the various stages of grief that divorce can bring. Each week, I interview an expert or a guest who's been out there in the trenches going through divorce themselves, sharing their stories, their knowledge, their inspiration with listeners, so that ultimately I can help them to divorce well. You can find my podcast on all podcast platforms or visit my website at www.leannetownsend.ca.